Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Hi.
Goodbye, baby.
Well, let's start it. It's the Steve Cochran Show. And show number 954, Cochran Show on Twitter. I enjoy following me. You should follow me as well.
You're quite entertaining.
Do you ever like your own tweets?
You know, I think that's a little over the top.
Well, you said you
okay,
followed
twice.
Yourself.
Okay. Pat Brady will be in. Chuck Todd will be on. And we have Illinois Education Secretary Beth Purvis on this morning to ask some questions about whether or not that little thing of schools opening on time will in fact happen. Dean later. And the Smithsonian Channel is doing a story of Son of Sam. Remember the serial killer Son of Sam?
Oh, yeah.
Summer of 78? I think it was 78. 76? Okay. There's a Smithsonian Channel story there. They do great documentary work, not surprisingly. And we'll have somebody on from that as well. And then some women's health stuff later, too. Because you should be healthy, women. Who's going to take care of us if you're not healthy? We're a mess. Let's do the top 6 and 6.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. With the top 6 at 6. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60 Minute Man.
American Weathermakers, heating and cooling the 60 Minute Man, bringing the top 6 at 6. Alderman Edward Burke. You familiar with Eddie?
I know Edward Burke very well.
He of the 14th and Alderman Raymond Lopez of the 15th want to hold parents responsible if their kids have guns. An ordinance introduced Wednesday City Council meeting would allow police to cite parents that are found to know their kids 16 and under have guns and fail to make reasonable efforts to stop the possession or report the possession to law enforcement. Couldn't agree more.
I agree with you 1,000%. Yep.
I mean, absolutely. Who can argue with that?
Absolutely. And all the shootings, too, that are happening now, so many, too many of these young kids finding the guns that are either not locked up or illegal.
Sure. And getting them, and you know, you got to be a little more involved as a parent. If you, I didn't know Timmy had a gun.
Mm-hmm.
Timmy, where are you going? To the mall.
Right.
Pay attention. Senate President John Cullerton said Wednesday that lawmakers will wait until next week, to send Governor Rauner an overhaul of the school funding formula he's promised to veto, prompting Republicans to double down on accusations that Democrats are trying to create panic about whether schools will be able to open this fall. Well, that would be the game, wouldn't it?
Yes.
It's not really about politicians doing their job. It's about stressing out parents and students to the nth degree, and teachers, too, and administrators.
There was also a report that the session is supposed to start at noon today, and many, many lawmakers are either on vacation or with their families, so they said that they can't make noon the noon start time.
So arrest them.
So they won't hit. Oh, yeah.
When do we get to that level? When does the governor get to that level where he starts issuing subpoenas for appearance for the people that are employed as legislators?
He could legally have the state police. I mean,
go pick him up.
You'd go to that level.
Need a ride?
Right.
Let me have a cop take time off his duty to go pick you up because you can't get yourself to Springfield.
Right.
Next. One dead, 7 hurt, an Ohio State Fair ride broke apart, tossing passengers into the air. That's incredible.
Have you seen the video?
No, I can't watch it.
Don't do it.
It's very tough to watch.
No, and look, rides are unbelievably safe, especially the bigger the event, but sometimes horrible things happen, and this was certainly one of those.
Don't you think we're hearing about more of them now, or is it just that people have their cell phones and we're seeing the videos?
I think it's the latter.
I don't know. I'd say stick to the corn dogs and lemon shake-ups.
Yeah, the elephant ears.
Yep. It's tougher to eat when you're on one of these rides anyway.
The fair will stay open. All the rides are shut down, but the rest of the Ohio State Fair, so you can get the corn dogs and the elephant ears.
They didn't close the fair down?
Correct.
They must have closed it down for a while.
Well, for the day, but it's going to remain open through its duration. What the rides are closed, though.
I guess that's the right thing to do. I don't know.
Well, who would want to go on one now?
Ooh. Well, you can't know.
I guarantee you people would. People would line up to go on the rides.
Come on.
No, they would. They absolutely would.
Those rides always scared me.
Yeah, me too.
What kind of ride was it? I don't even know what it was.
It was one of the... What do they call it? It's like they call it the Fireball, I think, but it was... One of those where it's
like
angled.
A combination roller coaster, Ferris wheel, teacups thing.
More like more closer to Ferris wheel where it's spinning and
but
tilting.
It's a Ferris wheel and a tilt-a-whirl combined.
Exactly,
right?
The one that goes way up in the air and then you can spin at the top. Yeah, it's got that long arm.
Yeah. No would be the answer. Next, Politico reports President Trump's snap decision to ban transgender service members was a last-ditch effort to save a House proposal full of campaign promises, which included funding a border wall. Kids, it can only be one of three things. Here are the three things that this week could be. It's a distraction to have Jeff Sessions suddenly be the center of attention with no reason to bring it up when he brought it up. It's a distraction to have this transgender issue come up with no reason for it to come up right now. It's a distraction to have Scaramucci hinting broadly that Reince Priebus is about to go and talking about leaks. Couldn't all of this be a discussion where the president says to Scaramucci, bury Russia, bury it now, what do we do? And here is the solution temporarily. Or, as this news item states, the president has done nothing to move his agenda forward. He's gotten in his own way over and over and over again. Does this tamp down any coverage of the fact that he's failing in the job as president by creating these distractions? I don't think that's the answer, because he appears to be a bigger failure by the way he's acting this week than ever before. So how does this help him? Nobody's talking about his agenda because everybody's talking about what a train wreck he is.
Are you suggesting bringing logic into this new...
Yeah, shame on me.
Okay, got it.
Shame on me.
And the transgender story yesterday really smothered what could have been a major positive story for his administration with his Foxconn announcement.
Yeah.
Nobody was talking about Foxconn yesterday.
Foxconn in Wisconsin, new jobs initiative that got no coverage yesterday because we were too busy talking about all the other things that make the train wreck that Donald Trump is. Next. Prince William working his last shift as an ambulance pilot as he makes the move to take up full-time royal duties along with his wife. He has still been on reservist duty as is part of the royal family tradition. And finally, hot weather in Tacoma, Washington caused dough inside a truck to expand and rise inside a semi-trailer. To spill out of the truck like a glazed donut on wheels. And the dough oozed out of the highway. At which point a truckload of hungry people came by and ate it.
Bread.
I'm withholding about different things, I would say. So I don't
how could that
slapped?
Not happen before?
So did it, like, bake? Is that what happened? Was it basically an oven?
Well, you needed to season it a little bit, turn it into breadsticks.
Did it have crust?
You have to knead it.
No crusties. You know that.
Thank goodness.
Top six brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Man. Let's go to Nick DiGilio, and Nick and I will talk about some movies, including whatever his latest Nick Club movie club situation might be. Didn't I just see you in a parking lot?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's about the only time Nick and I see each other now. We're two ships.
Dan drives at, he goes about 95 miles an hour on the Kennedy to get me home. So.
Nick and I are now two ships that pass in the night.
That sounds like
And I miss you.
I miss you as well, buddy. We used to do this thing where he'd be on the show. He'd hang out for a while.
Yeah, he did do that for a while.
You know who ruined it? Grzanich ruined it with his highly rated 5 a.m. program.
Come on.
It's your fault,
Steve. I
think
of myself as the bridge between both of you.
Yeah, you're splitting Nick and I up. All right, let's talk about some of these movies. You know, and I saw Baby Driver a couple weeks ago, and I said, you know what? I'm going to get back in the groove here. I'm going to start seeing movies all the time. I haven't seen anything since. So now I know there's stuff.
I got to tell you, man, it's a good time. There's a lot of good stuff in the theaters. Now Dunkirk is one of the best movies of the year, and one of the best. I personally think it's one of the best war movies ever made. It's just incredible. And
I'm hearing the same thing.
A lot of great stuff is out. Yeah, a lot of great stuff.
All right, let's go through some of the stuff coming out this week. We're seeing these billboards for Detroit about the 1967 riots and an incident. This is based on a true story, or do they keep pretty true to the story?
No, it's based on a true story, and it's written by Mark Bolan and directed by Catherine Bigelow. They've made, this is their third movie together. The other ones being The Hurt Locker, which, you know, won her Best Director award, and the other being Zero Dark Thirty. And this is now her writing partner, and they continue to make extraordinary movies. Catherine Bigelow is one of the best directors alive, first woman to ever win an Academy Award for Best Director. And the reviews of this have been stellar. It's got a pretty incredible cast, and the studio is very confident in it. They were originally going to release it in a couple of weeks, like in the dead days of August, but they pushed it up, and you know, like they just did a press release on Monday saying that they were releasing it tomorrow. So they've got a lot of confidence in it. And it's based on, you know, a real incident and some of the riots that took place in 67 in Detroit. John Boyega, John Krasinski, Will Poulter, Anthony Mackie are all in it. I have nothing but confidence in this. I think Catherine Bigelow is just...
What is John Krasinski doing it?
He plays, if I'm not mistaken, I haven't seen the film yet, but he plays a lawyer in it who is representing some of the people who are going to be, who are under suspicion of starting riots.
Item number two, Landline. All right, nobody's got a landline anymore. Why would I go to this movie?
Well, because it takes place in 1995 when people still did have landlines.
Yes.
Takes place in New York City in 1995. The great, great Jenny Slate, who is just such a wonderful actress. And I'm so glad that...
Well, you haven't gotten to the one that I would go see this movie. Edie Falco's in this movie.
Yeah, Edie Falco's in it. John Turturro and Abby Quinn. Abby Quinn and Jenny Slate play sisters who discover that their dad, played by John Turturro, is having an affair. And don't know what to do about it, whether to tell their mother, Edie Falco, and it kind of splits the family apart and changes the relationship that they have with their dad, John Turturro. I love everybody in this movie, and the people behind it are very smart writers and a good director. And I'm really excited to see this, and I'm just glad for Jenny Slate because you know she's one of the people that got canned from Saturday Night Live way too soon, and spent a little time struggling, but since then has done great TV work on Parks and Rec and other shows and been in great movies. And she does a lot of terrific voiceover work in cartoons. And I'm just happy that her career has taken off because she was terrific for the one season she was on SNL. She, by the way, I don't know if you know the story about this one. She has a distinction as an SNL cast member, Steve. Do you know what it is?
No.
Her first episode ever, she dropped the F-bomb on live TV.
Is that why she got popped? Yeah. Why I never understood why she was out after a year.
I think that was part of it. She only was on one season, used sparingly,
okay.
Which is too bad because she's very, very funny. And she's getting the last laugh, though, because she's doing great work now.
Hmm. And Edie Falco I love because as Carmela Soprano, she was un-friggin' believable. And I think one of the great actresses of our generation.
Oh, I totally agree with you. Edie Falco is just amazing. And I've seen the trailer for this and some scenes from it, and it looks like she's doing some good work here. And you get to work with her and John Turturro. That's just greatness, right?
Let me tell you something. If I'm John Turturro, I go back and I watch Edie Falco when she finally loses it with Tony Soprano in that kitchen scene and has one of the great meltdowns of all time. And I go, I'm too afraid to make this movie. I'm the bad guy in this movie. She'll kill me.
I got to cheat on her. What?
The Emoji Movie. This would be your mandatory law-abiding kid movie of the week. What do you heard about this?
Here's the curious thing about this. First of all, I can't believe that there's an Emoji Movie.
Yeah, me
I'm
either.
Like, what the hell is going on?
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, even the worst animated movies get screened for critics. On a Saturday morning so the critics can bring their kids, even the worst ones, no press screenings at all for this one.
I've never seen that.
Never.
No.
This is the first time in animated movies. I mean, even like The Nut Job got a screening for critics, and this one is not, despite the fact that, I don't know, do you see the voice talent that this movie?
Yeah, it's got a great cast.
Incredible cast. James Corden, Stephen Wright. Patrick Stewart, by the way, plays the emoji poop, the poop emoji.
Well, I think it's a role of a lifetime.
Yeah. Anna Faris, Maya Rudolph, Sofia Vergara, T.J. Miller, Christina Aguilera. I mean, there's no lack of talent here in the voice department from what I hear.
Is there a big boob emoji for Sofia Vergara? That seems to be where she's locked in.
And Christina Aguilera.
Well, it's all working out. Atomic Blonde. This is Charlize Theron becoming an action star. I've seen some pretty good buzz on this.
Yeah, I can't wait to see this movie. You guys, I don't know if you guys know that I've seen Mad Max Fury Road a couple times.
Yeah, I think it was twice a day. Every day?
It's always in an hour.
It's at this point, I kind of lost track, but I'm around 150, 155. And one of the reasons I've seen that movie so many times, besides the fact that it's like a masterpiece, is because Charlize Theron is so unbelievable in it and as Furiosa. And I was never a huge Charlize Theron fan. I liked her in a few movies. I really loved her in Young Adult. And I wasn't even crazy about her in Monster when she won the Academy Award. But when I saw her in Fury Road, everything changed. And now she's executive producer of this. She plays a spy who goes to Berlin in 1989, 5 days before the wall comes down, meets up with her partner, played by the great James McAvoy. And then they look for this dossier on these people who are killing members of the CIA. And basically, it's just her kicking ass for an hour and a half. She did her own stunts. There is already buzz on one sequence in the movie. It's a one-take fight scene where she gets beaten up and she beats the hell out of about seven guys in a stairwell, which is about 8 minutes long. It's one take, and she does her own stunts. She busted her face against a cameraman when they were filming it. She trained at the same place that Keanu Reeves trained for John Wick, and it's supposed to be nonstop action. And over the top, and she's just really going to just kick some butt. John Goodman's in it, and James McAvoy, as I mentioned. I am so excited. I mean, this is going to be a great weekend because it's Kathryn Bigelow kicking butt behind the camera, mm-hmm. and Charlize Theron kicking butt in front of the camera, and it's going to be 4 hours of greatness this weekend.
Now, I know one of the great enemies of Nick DiGiulio is daylight. You know, he works between 2 and 5 a.m., and he sees a lot of movies. But you do know people will be outside this weekend as well.
They will?
All right, so the next Nick movie is a film club screening of Revenge of the Nerds with Curtis Armstrong live. They'll do a Q&A afterwards. That's a week from Tuesday at the AMC Rosemont 18. Tickets at AMCtheaters.com. We should remind people, however, the AMC Theaters is the same theater you've been at forever. It's just they bought it, right?
They bought it. It used to be the Movie Co. Theater, and it's transitioning to AMC. And it's cool because they now have a dine-in thing where you can actually go to the movie, sit there, order your food, and it brings right to you while you watch the movie. It's $14 to get in. It includes parking and popcorn. You know, popcorn usually is about $400 a bag.
Yep.
It's free popcorn. And on top of that, Curtis Armstrong is going to be there from Risky Business, Better Off Dead, Moonlighting. He plays Booger in Revenge of the Nerds. He's going to introduce the movie. We'll do a Q&A afterwards. He's got a new memoir that I'm almost done reading called Revenge of the Nerd, and it's great. And
how long could Curtis Armstrong's memoir be? Is it a pamphlet?
No. It's a full. It goes all the way back to. I mean, he's like 63 years old.
Yeah, that's true. He's been around for a while,
and he's been around for a while. And you know, it was weird because he was like the senior guy in the cast of Risky Business. Everybody was like either 18, 19, 17. He was 28 when he made that movie.
Oh, I didn't know that. Well, he's almost as old as I am. So I should have more respect. All right, buddy. All the best, and follow you on Facebook. Nick has his own separate show on Facebook that he does constantly. He does a great job there, too. We'll do this, a break, and we're back. It's the Steve Cochran Show, and it's Andrea with your big story next on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
I am pleased to endorse Donald Trump for the presidency of the United States.
We just got the endorsement of Senator Jeff Sessions, who's one of the great people.
Senator Jeff Sessions is a tremendous man.
Nobody better than Jeff.
Let me tell you about the Donald Trump I've come to know. In his personal relations, he is unfailingly courteous and generous.
Senator Sessions, he's fantastic.
Jeff Sessions is a fantastic man.
Donald Trump is the singular leader that can get this country back on track.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions, welcome to the White House.
Now get out. Never liked Sessions, not one time. I wonder if Donald Trump Jr. goes, am I going to be next? Loyalty. It's a word that starts with L. That seems to be as much as the president knows about it. And I think it would be a real time saver if he would just take all of the distractions of the week and put them into one barrel and say that Jeff Sessions and Reince Priebus are transgender leakers. There you go. Now you got one story instead of three.
Perfect.
Chuck Todd joins me. Meet the Press. Morning, Chuck. How are you?
Morning. You know, there's something about that song that always just sort of, it's like, oh, it's summer. It's a great sort of summer. Yeah. You're outside. Just don't bother to listen to the lyrics.
Right. Or put it in context of the current world.
Exactly. The best part of that song is that it was Lynyrd Skynyrd's rebuttal to Neil Young, which is really what the song's always been about, which is a grievance song.
Yes.
And hey, guess what? That's what life. That's what the Trump White House is about.
This is all of what.
Let it govern.
All of what's happening and has happened this week. There's only one thing it adds up to if, with any common sense whatsoever, is distractions. Don't look at Russia over here. Look at all this stuff over here. Yeah. I mean, what else could it be?
Well, there's the look. It makes because it if it's not a distraction. If it's not an attempted distraction from Russia, then it's just simple incompetence, right? And I think there is some rank incompetence here in general. I mean, but what this really is feels as if it's expediency having to do with based on the core obsession of the president, which is this Russia investigation and how it's impacting his family, pure and simple.
Yeah, and because of that, the constant distractions, again, tamp down the ridiculous argument that the media only covers Russia. Because the story that keeps coming up is the story that the president creates. And he creates it day after day. I just hope people pause long enough, meaning the 35%, to consider that. It just adds up.
Here's when it's going to matter. And this is, you know, this is what I hate thinking about on this front, but it's the reality I think that we face, which is look at how crisis oriented this White House is when it comes to creating its own messes. What happens when they have to deal with a real crisis? You know, they haven't had the big natural disaster yet. They haven't had the unexpected sort of like, you know, thing that happens that they have to react to that is not of their making at all. Right. Not anything of their making. Just one of those things that just happens. And it's their job to deal with it. Right. It's their job to whatever it is, whether it is that. And you have, you know, who's the chief of staff? Who's in charge? What does this? It was Scaramucci simply hired to fire Reince. Was that his job on this front? And are they so busy knifing each other that they're going to let Rome burn or let some city flood?
Chuck, we understand the distractions. We're used to them now, the red herrings. Mm-hmm. Why the transgendered issue? Why now?
Well, there's the way it got under the president, why he did it this way, and so it appears to be a favor, a return favor to Mark Meadows, the guy who's the House Freedom Caucus. They're in the middle of their own defense appropriations bill, spending bill. Apologies for using Washington speak appropriations. Mm-hmm. You know, we're the only people that use that word. Spending, right? Mm-hmm. Anyway, sorry. The defense spending bill, and it's been tangled up on the issue. Should the military fund sex change operations, right? That's really what this fight was about. And instead, this apparently, you know, Meadows lobbied the White House to say, you know, can you just, you know, get this issue out of the way? Whether he asked for a full ban or not is unclear. And that the president, though, seemed to go farther than where anybody was even asking him to go with the ban. And now he's blindsided his defense secretary. And what was amazing to me was I was surprised at the quick public pushback by some very prominent Republicans, not just the usual suspects, but people like Orrin Hatch, who didn't just push back at the decision by the president. Went a step further and said, you know, this, you can't be picked, you know, transgender folks are born that way. And when you've got Orrin Hatch not just rebuking the president, but taking it a step further, somebody who's been a leader in the Mormon church saying, hey, these folks are born this way. First of all, it's a reminder that culturally this issue has moved a lot faster in the public than perhaps with our leaders in Washington. That's number one. But the president may have been wholly out of touch on this one, more than he realized.
Well, we know that he never remembers what he said the day before because we know he has no strategy. He gets up, he opens his mouth, stuff falls out, and then the next day we're supposed to forget any of it fell out. But the thing that confuses me about this is, okay, Republicans of any ilk come to them and they go, we need a favor. My understanding is, and correct me where I'm wrong here, that they asked for no funding for the medical portion of the transitional surgeries
right.
and treatments. They didn't ask for a full and complete ban. So he's taking all sorts of heat for this now. When is he going to throw the Republicans under the bus that asked for it originally?
That's an interesting way. I guess you're just assuming that when he reverses himself, he's got to blame somebody else.
Exactly.
Which I get. Look, it's pretty clear to me you're going to see some sort of grandfathering that anybody that's currently serving, you know, nobody is going to get kicked out for being transgender or something like that. That's my guess is where that's headed. But, you know, what I think is unclear is whether this is something, and I think this is going to get debated further, which is, can the president unilaterally make this decision, or could Congress legislate this decision, basically reverse it and by legislating it differently? And they might, the way the president handled this might actually motivate Congress to simply reverse his decision via legislation, and then it wouldn't even be in the president's purview.
All right, let me talk to you about, and you got to be old enough to understand this reference, the Wally Cox lookalike Jeff Sessions from Alabama, Woody Allen's slightly weaker brother. This is a guy who had a nice, comfortable career in the Senate, could have rode it out in an unbelievably safe seat in Alabama, and been a legendary Alabama political figure. But he gets a chance to be attorney general. He takes bullets for Trump all through the campaign. And now Trump inexplicably earlier this week decides, now I'm going to throw him under the bus with his same nonsensical, I need a time machine argument that Jeff Sessions should have told me he was going to recuse himself, when that's not possible in the universe we live in. So why now? Where does this go from now? And does Trump even comprehend that this leads to impeachment?
Why now is a simple, there's a simple explanation. It's because of the family issue. He views this as a threat to the family. You talk to folks in the White House who are just themselves, you know, desperately wishing he would just shut up about the probe, stop threatening the Mueller firing and all this stuff. He essentially just say there's nothing we can do, because when it comes to the family, they didn't say the word irrational, but it's essentially like it almost, when it's about protecting the family, there's almost an irrational sense of thinking when that goes behind it. So because Trump Jr. and now Ivanka's hiring a higher lawyer, and because the whole, it looks like they're all coming under fire, that is what's motivating this. And so what's interesting to me is I was having my own flashbacks. You're going to Wally Cox. I'm having my own flashbacks to the mid 90s. Bill and Hillary Clinton were so angry at Janet Reno for so long. They hated the fact that she hired Ken Starr.
Right.
They thought, and to this day, I don't think Hillary Clinton ever did forgive Janet Reno for it. Bill Clinton did, but not Hillary. But you know what they didn't do? They didn't talk about it publicly.
Right.
Now it was a badly kept secret. But they knew if they tried to aggressively do something about it and fire him, what would have happened? The impeachment would have succeeded. You know. So it's. This is the part where it gets at the straight up temperament issue, right? He just doesn't have the temperament to handle the fact that sometimes he was elected to put country above all, including his family.
You know, and himself. And it's interesting because if you go back and you play this tape of Chuck's conversation with us here, you know, he's protecting the family, protecting the family. It sounds like a scene out of The Sopranos. Mm-hmm. You know, and you can't.
You know, I hate to make that exactly. It feels like it's like how you would create a stereotype of a mob family.
Right. Right. But maybe it's a stereotype because it's true.
He has no loyalty really to anybody except arguably Don Jr., Ivanka. We talked about this yesterday.
You know, Ivanka, I believe. I'm not sure Don Jr.'s safe.
So what would be the MO to sign up to be in this administration? I mean, if Jeff Sessions is replaced or if he resigns, what would be the MO for anybody to say, oh, you know what, I'm going to go work here, because you might be out of a job in
Yeah, Robert Bork is dead. Who's he going to find?
Yeah,
I know. Look, there's always somebody that will delude themselves into thinking, oh, no, 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 they're the ones that can steer clear of the crazy, or they're the ones that can somehow move the president and keep him from doing that to him. You know, there's always folks that think, oh, no, these other folks didn't know how to handle the pressure. I can do it. So there's that. But what you're really going to have is a government filled with every C-level, C-level person that couldn't get a job in the Bush administration. That's essentially what's going to end up happening, is that any Republican that couldn't get hired in a Rubio administration, a Romney administration, because they just, whatever, maybe they were just, low level, not qualified, any of that stuff, they're going to end up being the ones populating all the sort of, all of these places because they want it on their resume. At the end of the day, don't forget, there are always people that will take the job title no matter the cost.
What time is it on Reince Priebus's doomsday wristwatch? Is it almost midnight yet?
I think it is. What's interesting, though, is what Scaramucci did to him last night by accusing him of something he didn't do and getting caught doing that, is that it may have bought Priebus some time. I think Reince's inclination is to see if he can weather this storm and see if Scaramucci shoots himself in the foot and essentially he can win the power struggle by inertia. But I think if he can find an elegant way to leave, he would leave. I mean, he is miserable in his job. Let's not pretend he's not. He's miserable in it. If he had a landing spot, he'd have left already.
It's Chuck Todd, Sunday Meet the Press Daily, MTP Daily. Don't forget about the blog, which is entitled, or the podcast, I should say, which is entitled?
Nice, 1947. And if we're going to keep plugging, I got my first three product that comes out in the morning, too. I mean, Meet the Press. If it's an hour during the day, if it ends in Y, it's Meet the Press, man.
By the way, Chuck has not slept since he took this gig. Thank you, sir.
That's exactly right.
Take care.
You got it.
That's Chuck Todd, and it's Traffic with Mary.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
Under budget, ahead of schedule.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Where, essentially, I'm the president.
On Chicago's very own.
I love Chicago. I know Chicago.
720 WGN.
It's 7:12 now, and host of the Sunday Spin, Rick Pearson, is standing by from your Chicago Tribune, chicagotribune.com. Would it kill you? Get the paper. That's the new slogan I've given. Would it kill you? Get the paper. Hi, buddy.
Hey, good morning.
All right, so let's talk about this bill that isn't a bill. It may be a bill, and maybe there's school funding, and maybe there's not. What do we know?
So the legislature at the end of May, Democrats in the General Assembly passed a bill that would change the way that money is divvied up, state money is divvied up to local school districts, more than 850 school districts. And there's been talk about trying to make the state school aid formula, as it's known, more equitable. And this is the Democratic version that passed. There is a competing Republican version that didn't get called for a vote. The bill passed. A procedural hold was put on the bill using a parliamentary procedure. And so the bill has not gotten to the governor's desk. And the governor is asking that he get this bill on his desk so that he can use what's known as his amendatory veto power to rewrite the bill. And what he wants to do is he wants to take out provisions that he has called a Chicago bailout that basically build in money for teacher pensions, as well as give Chicago a special block grant that it's been receiving for more than 20 years. Yesterday was the first day of the legislature's special session that the governor called. Nothing really for legislators to act on because they haven't sent the governor the bill. Senate President John Cullerton says he will send the bill to the governor on Monday. And House Speaker Michael Madigan says that he believes there's a good opportunity that lawmakers will override the governor's veto. Bottom line is, even though we do have a budget, and it was a budget enacted over the governor's veto, the provision for providing schools around the state with money was attached to a change in the formula. So if this bill in some way does not become law, there is no state money for public schools when they open next month.
Yeah, and they are scheduled to open in 3 weeks. So is this a stall politically that creates more stress on the system and specifically for parents and kids?
It's a stall politically on both sides. The governor trying to get reassemble his base has spent the last couple of days traveling downstate to downstate schools, blasting the Chicago machine and Chicago Democrats, and saying that Chicago lawmakers want to take away money from your districts and give it to the city of Chicago.
All right, well, let me ask about that for a second. Why should downstate and schools outside of Chicago pay for a pension bailout? I'm not even talking about the block grant, because that's got a 20-year tradition, you know, and that's an arguable point, certainly. But why should the rest of the state pay for the city school pension problem?
Because the rest of the state pays for other pensions for every school district, for every teacher in every school district outside of Chicago.
So if that's the case, then why is this even an argument?
Well, it's an issue of what the mayor and others have said. It's an issue of what they call pension equity, and that Chicago taxpayers are basically being double taxed because some of their state income tax money is paying for teacher pensions for teachers in the rest of the state, plus they pay property taxes for their local Chicago public school teachers. The governor has said we can talk about that issue, but that ought to be talked about separately, not as part of a school funding package.
This is the thing that makes people in the state's head explode. None of this is unsolvable. None of this is you know, the greatest problems in the world. It's not even close. Why can't we find a way to solve problems in this state?
Frankly, I don't know that it's just limited to this state. I think it's just the state of politics as we know it today, and that politics is so much of a win-win game, and that's where you see terms like compromise go out the window, because it's about racking up political wins, about Republicans racking up wins, about Democrats racking up wins, and denying wins to the other side. And that's truly where, like I said, we've just lost any kind of attempts at compromise. The House Democrats, Speaker Madigan, Senate President John Cullerton have said that they were willing to send the governor the bill, but they wanted to see the actual language he was going to use in rewriting the bill. The governor says he's not going to meet with them.
Wait, I want to make sure I understand this too. So, in other words, the governor can't see the bill until he shows them the language that he may put into the bill? How can he adjust the language until he sees the bill?
Well, the bill is out there. The bill is public. The bill, I mean, it's the bill is public record. And their argument is, the Democratic argument is, if the governor will tell us what language he wants to change, then maybe we can sit down and have a meeting and negotiate. The governor says, I've done meetings. He likened it to rope-a-dope and said, send me the bill and then you'll get to see the language. And so we go back into special session again today.
Freaking ridiculous.
We go back into special session today in Springfield. There's nothing before the legislature to consider. So they will probably gavel out very quickly, and the governor and Republican lawmakers have now scheduled like a daily press conference, and so they'll have their press conference again today to make these same points.
Well, the good news here is Madigan's got plenty of time to call in. So there's really no excuse for the speaker not to call the show. Pat Brady's at Rick.
Hey, Rick, how you doing?
Hey, good morning, Pat.
Hey, just a question, and I'm trying to be objective here, not my typical Republican stance.
Why do that now, Pat?
Well, that's what you're for. You're objective. I'm not. But the one thing I wanted to ask about, and as a guy that lives in the burbs and grew up downstate, the argument against Chicago can be very politically effective. But what about, has the city instituted any kind of reforms to this pension system to show that they're not going to run it the way they have in the last two decades, where they're constantly asking for more money for pensions?
Continuing to fund the failure?
Yeah, did the mayor make any reforms of the current pensions? With them, I know there's a lot of legal restrictions.
Yeah, not per se of the teachers. He's done that in some steps involving municipal workers and others. But the city has raised, you know, property taxes, and frankly, there's an argument that some suburban lawmakers will say that given the unique way that property is assessed in Cook County and Chicago, they could raise property taxes even higher. They have that wherewithal to kind of fund their property tax issues, but or their pension issues. But really, this is all rooted back to 1995, when then Mayor Daley wanted control of the schools, and it was a Republican governor, Jim Edgar, and a Republican-controlled legislature who basically said, good luck with that. Okay, here you go, and gave Daley the schools. And at that time, the Chicago Teacher Pension Fund was funded at over 100%. And now it's, I believe, somewhere around 50%, because for 10 years, instead of putting money into the pensions, just like the state, they ended up using it for operations. And now there's an increased pension liability. That having been said, the liability of the or the funding ratio of money to pensions for Chicago public school teachers is actually better than the entire statewide system is for all the teachers in the rest of the state.
I honestly don't know what we're fighting over, you know, and we follow this.
Well, we're fighting over politics, Steve.
But that's just it. That's really we're fighting. It seems like both sides have reasonable requests that could be reasonably met in the middle. And both sides need to survive for the greater good of all of us, survive and thrive. So let's see. The only people getting in the way of this are the requisite jackasses who are in charge. So nothing changes. You know, this is where it's different than other states, Rick. We're worse than they are. We're more bad at it. We're badder at it.
I think you have your bumper sticker for 2018 right there.
Illinois, we're badder at it than they are.
Well, and truly, you look at, and we talked about this during the whole 2.5 year cycle where we did not have a state budget and what was going to be kind of the leverage points to make some action take place. And throughout all of that, the question was, what if the schools didn't open? Right. Now, there's no superintendent that I'm aware of in any of the school districts around the state that says that schools won't open on time. It's just a matter of how long they can stay open with whatever financial reserves they have. And that having been said, you have, of course, have this great deal of uncertainty over, you know, with parents and do I have to try to find childcare? That kind of, I mean, I've referred to Illinois as not the land of Lincoln, but a state of uncertainty. And that's what we've got going here. And really, I think the ultimate question comes down to, if schools don't open, or if there's complaints about the possibility that schools don't stay open, who gets the blame for it? And that's kind of where we're at right now, is I think you have both sides assessing who wears the jacket if schools aren't able to stay open.
And that is the political argument that continues. But allow me to speak on behalf of 99% of Illinoisans. We don't care if you still have your job in politics. Now, here's what I'd like the people walking up and down the street to do. Care enough to go and be involved in the primary process, and don't let it eclipse you, because those that make the laws control the laws, and the laws that are currently in place will keep those that have effed up the state in power. The F in that case for failure.
hey, Rick. Okay, we had the veto override on the tax increase, the budget. What does it look like for this? I mean, Jim Durkin, our friend Jim Durkin, has the hardest job on the planet. How's
correct?
I haven't seen any counts. I don't know. Are the downstaters going to stay with the governor, or is this compelling enough reason to say that money might come back to them, or what's going to happen, you think?
Well, I think there's a belief among, well, number one, all of these school districts, superintendents from around the state, the vast majority of them say they support the Democratic bill. And the governor is saying, well, that's because Madigan is basically holding a gun to their head as hostages in this. The superintendents that I've seen in social media say, no, that's not true. We think this is an equitable funding bill. That having been said, in the Senate, I don't think there's much of a problem to override the governor's veto. In the House, 67 Democrats, you need 4 Republicans to do it. We had in that budget override and tax increase package, ultimately 10 in the House. And there's a belief that if you had lawmakers, Republican lawmakers, that supported a tax increase in a budget, you should be able to expect that several of them, if not most of them, would then support the funding of local schools. And while Madigan says that he thinks the opportunity for an override in the House is good, He also indicated it probably wouldn't be something that would take place quickly. And with that, here again, you get further into August and you have that uncertainty that exists and the political pressure ratcheting up. And if you've got legislators back in their districts and they look like they're stalling on funding the schools, there's going to be some heat to pay.
So they create the
override votes.
They create the all the stall tactic is to create the crisis and put the heat on the four or five they need from the.
Whoa, Pat, you're saying Mike Madigan is only interested in himself. I don't like that kind of talk.
I didn't say that. I'm just laying out what's going on.
That's unbelievable. I am. It's Sunday. Sunday Spin, who's your guest?
I've got Democratic State Representative Rob Martwick. We're going to talk about the school funding issue. Also have Chicago Alderman Anthony Beal, and we'll talk about his complaints about the property tax assessment system in Cook County and how he feels that it unfairly overassesses the poor.
Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson. Get the paper. Would it kill you?
He's
get
actually pretty good. You got to get a career in journalism, Rick. You're pretty good at this.
Yeah. You just started 2 weeks ago.
Appreciate it, guys.
Yeah. See you, buddy. Back with more Pat Brady coming up. And in about 15 minutes, Education Secretary Beth Purvis scheduled to appear on the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
The General Assembly is here in Springfield, but Speaker Madigan has ordered them to do nothing.
The governor has adopted a no-compromise position, which will keep the state in chaos for several weeks and months.
It's already passed, but they're hiding it. They're holding it. They're not sending it to my desk.
You just can't make it up. Ugh. Illinois Education Secretary Beth Purvis joins us now. I appreciate your time. Appreciate you coming on. I don't envy your job, but somebody's got to save the schools. Are you up to it?
Well, I think if we all work collaboratively together, we can land this plane and we can make sure that schools receive their funding on time.
Can you talk to the children in charge and tell them to play nice?
Well, I am just going to, I'm here in Springfield. I am waiting for the bill to arrive on the governor's desk. And so that we can move this process forward.
Pat Brady's here. Andre's here as well. We'll get them in just a second. But let's start with the basics. What's equitable funding? Do City of Chicago schools need a lot more money? And by percentage, how much more? And what do we know?
Well, first of all, I think we should all look at the fact that what is being discussed is historical funding for all 852 school districts. Through the bipartisan bicameral commission that built upon the work that's been occurring in this state for decades, the General Assembly came together and agreed that we needed a new school funding formula that would set an adequacy target for all 852 districts based on the needs of the students, and then would distribute those dollars in a way that makes sure that our neediest districts, our districts with the greatest gap between what they currently funds they have available and what they need to spend to deliver a high quality education would be there. And the governor supports that bill. In fact, 1124, which is Senator Barrickman's bill, Senate Bill 1, the bill that was passed, and actually the governor's AV will all share those two very important pieces of the model. And that will ensure that all districts, including the Chicago Public Schools, which serves 19% of our students and has a high percentage of low-income kids, that they will receive the money that they need and they will receive an increase in FY18 over FY17.
With all due respect, Beth, because I appreciate the work you do and I respect you, to the average person driving to work, their head just exploded. If the city has 20% of what you're talking about, it costs more money to run a school in the city than it does, say, in Bloomington or downstate somewhere. Having said that, simplify it for us. Does the city need more money than the rest of the state needs?
It does not need more money than the rest of the state, but it does need more money than, say, districts who have a low percentage of high-income kids. So I would say districts like Chicago, like Peoria, East St. Louis, who all have Waukegan, Cicero, who serve high percentage of children who live in poverty, need more money than they're currently getting.
Beth,
and the governor's AV will make sure that occurs.
Beth, to be clear, though, this is not a bailout. So if neither Senate Bill 1 or 1124 does not pass, this doesn't mean that the schools will not open. It's just the whole bottom line issue problem, whatever you want to call it, is bailing out the Chicago public schools that Rauner does not want to approve, rather than providing extra funding for with the pensions.
So the way that I would say it is, the way that Senate Bill 1 was written, that there are things in there, a credit for historical pension costs that started about $506 million for FY18, and I've been told will increase to as much as $1 billion. By having that in the school funding formula, by addressing legacy pension costs within the school funding formula, it will divert funds from other needy districts. The governor believes that legacy pension costs should be addressed in a separate bill. The governor also believes that Chicago Public Schools should either receive their normal pension costs or they should receive the block grant. They should not get both in their base funding minimum. And SB1 has legacy pension costs, which I will tell you in the commission was there was no agreement that that should be in there. And again, the governor has been very clear that he does not believe Chicago Public Schools should get both the full block grant of $250 million in its base funding minimum and the normal pension costs and retiree health care costs, which are $221 million in FY18. And the governor believes that those things should be changed in SB1.
So and that's why, but that's why, that's why the governor needs to see the bill. This is the part where you have to, the governor has to see the bill to exercise his mandatory veto. And then if the House and Senate feel they have the votes to override, they can execute that because that's the way the process works. So the stall is ridiculous. Let me get Pat in here. Go ahead, Pat.
Hello, Beth. How you doing? To me, just listening to the questions, it does sound like a big bailout. If it's historical pension costs that taxpayers are going to pick up for the city of Chicago, it is a bailout.
Well, pick one. You get the block grant or you get the other. And then we negotiate from there. But don't ask for all of it. And if you ask for all of it, that's fine. Well, you ask for all of it, now negotiate.
We just got a big tax increase, and now we want a bailout for the Chicago public schools. If you're in the suburbs or live downstate, that's not something you want to see.
And this bill was passed 57 days ago. You know, the budget bill, the tax increase, they got to the governor's desk, I think, in 60 minutes. Why is it going to take 60 days to get this bill to the governor's desk?
And the speaker,
all the governor is asking is to be able to have, you know, he has the authority. His role is to sign it, to veto it, or AV it. He's been very clear that he's going to AV it, get it to his desk so the process can move forward, so that kids, parents, teachers, administrators, and communities can know that the money will flow to their schools and their students can get the high-quality education they deserve.
And again, this is what the listeners ought to be appalled by, because the stress this creates for parents and for kids on whether their schools are going to open on time is appalling. Now, what is the law in regards to the schools opening on time? I thought we lived in a state where there was a law that said schools have to open by a certain date.
That's a question I think you'd have to ask the Illinois State Board of Education. I will say that, you know, we have a state that every child is has the right to a free and appropriate education that for every student in the state. And we're concerned that by holding up this bill, we are holding up that process. In addition, the comptroller has not yet released the Q3 and Q4, what are called mandatory categorical payments. So schools are owed about $850 million from FY17. And so we also call on the comptroller to release at least those Q3 dollars so that schools have the cash on hand that they need to open their doors.
Okay, why is she not releasing that?
That is a question for the comptroller. We believe that, and I think there have been conversations with her from many people saying she can at least release those Q3 dollars. Again, Q3 and Q4 is $850 million the districts are across the state are owed for their mandated categorical payments, which is, you know, serving students with disabilities, serving English language learners, transportation for special education students. The districts, so when you add this, what is now a 56 or 57 day delay in sending the bill, and the fact the comptroller will not release those Q3 and Q4 payments, it is creating a crisis in all 800, well, not all, but in those districts that serve a high percentage of low-income kids, including the Chicago Public Schools, and those districts who, because of proration of general state aid or the fact that the General Assembly did not fully fund schools from 2009 to 2015, a lot of them have burned through their cash reserves. So this cash flow issue is a really big one for schools.
Nobody runs a business like this. How can you run, you know, politicians standing up going, oh, it's the kids. It's all about the kids. Kiss my butt. Well, it's all about the kids. You care about yourself. And let me tell you something. When it comes to the comptroller, let's give me an email address, Andrea, for the comptroller, sure, so we can let every listener know that they should be emailing the comptroller today and demanding an answer to why those Q3, Q4 payments haven't been released, and when will they be?
Well, and I will tell you, I've been talking to superintendents, and I've been saying to superintendents, you're critical thinkers. You understand the business of running schools. And I'm saying I would love for you to support the governor's mandatory veto. And when he gets the bill, we'll be very clear what that is. But more importantly, I'm asking them to do two different things. Call their elected officials and tell them to have the bill sent to the governor's desk today. And number two, call the controller and tell her to release the mandated categoricals.
info@SusannaMendoza.com. I urge you to flood her email box with a very simple question. Where are the Q3, Q4 payments to schools who have the majority of needy and underprivileged kids? Choose your own wording if you like. Where are the Q3, Q4 payments that we are told are available, and why haven't you released those funds? info@SusannaMendoza.com. Pat, last question.
No, I have no questions.
All right, well, let me throw one more in here from a listener then, Beth, if I could. This is from someone who I believe is a teacher. The CPS teacher's contract shows that the teachers pay 2% of their pension obligation. The rest of the teachers in the state pay 9%. Do you know if there is a pension equitability clause that's a part of the New Deal for teachers across the state?
I don't believe in Senate Bill 1 there is a pension equity deal. I think the governor has talked over and over again about the need for overall pension reform. And I think there have been conversations about districts about some cost shift, but that is not in Senate Bill 1.
I appreciate your time. We're going to have to do this again. Sorry.
Okay, thank you very much.
Hopefully we won't have to, but I'm sure we will.
Never nervous, Purvis. She's good.
Yeah, well, I mean, imagine that job.
It's the hardest job. Yeah. But the most important job, if you think about it, other than public safety.
But you're around politicians for most of your adult life. Does anybody have the stomach to hear one more time a politician stand up and go, hey, we're here for the kids?
Well, particularly
we're here for the kids.
Particularly
Pat,
the controller who claims to be and supposed to be independent from politics. The controller just basically hands out checks.
Right.
And she's not
That's what the job's supposed to be.
And she's not handing out checks because the speaker told her not to hand out the checks, right, because we need to create a crisis to put pressure on the four or five Republicans so they can get their Chicago schools bailout.
And as always, Susanna Mendoza is welcome here as well. Let's see. Susanna Mendoza, J.D. Pritzker, J.P. Pritzker, J.D. as well, and Mike Madigan. Yeah, you're all welcome here. Together, separately, somebody show up and answer a few questions.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood, you know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood, well, kiss me good.
Richards live at Channel 9. I believe I saw Annabella Val assaulted by Pat Tomasulo on
that
the Channel 9 monitor.
Is correct. He had her in a wrestling hold.
I hope she's filing some sort of charges.
I think she wants him to do it again.
Is that right? When is an HR violation not an HR violation? Hi, Dean. How are you?
Pat was a wrestling champion in high school, something mm-hmm. that he brings up about every 20 minutes on, on the show. So Anna was asking him to show her some of his wrestling holds.
Oh, why don't they just get a room, please? Same thing I say about Larry and Paul.
I forget what it was called, but it required Anna to lay on the ground face down.
Yeah.
Pat,
poor thing.
Pat getting on her back.
If I know the Channel 9 producers, and I believe I do, this video will appear again and again and again and again until Pat is thrown into the street.
And your point is?
No, there's no point. Yeah. When was the last time I had a point on this show?
That's very true. How long have I known you?
A long time. Justin Bieber ran down a guy with his truck, and he can't be stopped, and he will again. Angelina Jolie may have a health issue. Quincy Jones has a lawsuit settlement. And one of the great cartoon voice legends has passed away. Can you tell me one of the cartoon characters this woman is famous for?
Cindy Lou from
The Grinch.
The Grinch.
Cindy Lou Who.
Cindy Lou Who is one of her famous voices.
Yep. Yep.
Her most famous voice is Rocky the Flying Squirrel.
Right.
Natasha Fatale.
Right.
From that show. Mm-hmm. It is June Foray. She's known as the first lady of voice acting. She did Granny from Sylvester and Tweety. You know, she was always going to the store, leaving little Tweety alone with Sylvester.
Yeah.
You know, in the cartoon. She did.
She was a terrible cartoon grandmother.
Witch Hazel. Witch mm-hmm. Hazel, the mean witch. She was Nell. From Dudley Do Right.
I actually do Dudley. Have you heard my Dudley?
I have not.
Nell! My horse, Nell! Yeah, not bad.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. She did voices in a Warner Brothers cartoon. She's been doing voices her entire
life. I believe we have a sample, don't we? Don't we have a little June foray?
We have a little montage.
Here's a little June.
Bullwinkle, you can't do that!
So, you're great. Big, wonderful moose.
One little feather harmed of this bird, I'm going to send you to the violin string factory.
Dudley, fancy meeting you here. I always knew you were a big spender, and there's just so many things in town I want to buy.
I'm sorry. I just can't go.
But think of the fun you'll be missing.
There's more to life than fun, Ogham.
A couple of arsenic, a spider, some glue. Mr. Gizzard, and he's here or two.
Fantastic.
For little folks and toys and oak.
What do you think? She'd be nothing but fun.
I interviewed
just hanging
her,
out with her.
I interviewed her one time. She was in Chicago for there was some big animation event going on, and she was here with Dawes Butler, who did the voice of Huckleberry Hound mm-hmm. and a lot of the famous Hanna-Barbera cartoons. And Jay Ward, who is one of the creators of Rocky and Bullwinkle. And I had all three of them in the studio, and they were doing their voice. He was also the voice of Bullwinkle. And it was the best hour of radio that I've ever done. I'm going to try to find the tape.
That'd be cool.
I have it someplace, but it's it was fantastic. She was delightful.
And she lived to be 90, huh?
99.
Oh, 99. God
bless
her.
99 years old. But also, the other thing is, in addition to all the voices that she did, she was instrumental in getting the Academy Awards to create a Best Animated Feature category.
Oh, is that right? I didn't know that.
Didn't exist before June Foray and many other very prominent people in animation made this happen. There was an industry event many years ago at which Martin Scorsese was attending, and somebody asked him, who are you most excited about seeing here tonight at this A-list filled, star-studded event? And Martin Scorsese said that he was most excited about meeting June Foray.
Very exciting.
That's very cool.
Yeah, that's cool. Good for her. It sounds like a life well lived. I think if you get to 99, though, you got to pull for 100.
She would have been 100 in September. She just missed it by a couple of months.
Actually, 99 is kind of a cool number, you know?
I think I'd rather be 99 than 100.
Yeah, a lot of people, you know, get to 100 and they get buried in all the. Well, that's a terrible way to put that. Get to be 100 and they get lost in the all the other people that turn 100. You don't hear a lot of people.
Yeah, Willard Scott shows up, and you know, when you're 99, you're rooting for him a little more.
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
Wouldn't that be great if we're 99 years old and still here doing this?
Those days, I feel it.
The same thing. Yeah,
that'd be a treat for all of us. Yeah.
Here's the only difference is we'd be 99 and we'd do the same stuff day after day after day. It would still be entertaining, but there'd be a lot of this. What? Huh? What?
Trying to picture the French accents of a 90-year-old man.
What did he say?
They'd be phlegmy. It's 8:18. More with Dean in a second, live from Channel 9. And thanks, as always, to our friends from Ravinia and the CSO Concert Series.
Calling his name, oh, 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 Dean Richard, the entertainment editor.
We're not going to play all 16 games, are we? We'll just play like five or six. Dean Richards rejoins us now.
Like the little show.
The show within a show?
Head. Yeah, the one that's in your head.
All right, why did Justin Bieber run a guy down with his... Wow, what happened there?
Hello.
Coach Fox.
Why did Justin Bieber run a guy down with a truck?
He didn't do it intentionally, I don't think. He was actually at a church service, and he was leaving the church service.
Doesn't seem very Christian.
He got into the truck that he was driving.
And ran a guy down.
And the paparazzi, you know, surrounded him, taking pictures, going like crazy.
And that's when he drove over the guy.
And that is sort of when he hit a guy. The photographers, they can be very aggressive.
Yeah.
And
I don't think you should run him over after church. You should wait till it's later, like a club.
Why is he driving, too?
Probably wait.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Why is he driving? People or...
Yeah. Bieber people.
You know, he's just an average guy like the rest of us.
Right. You're right, Dean. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Just one of us. So he's driving, and you know, apparently from all the reports, hit the gas pretty hard to take off, and all of the people who were surrounding the car were not out of the way, including one photographer who was hit.
Bowling for paparazzi.
To Bieber's credit, he did stop. He did get out. He stayed with the person until the paramedics.
Until he heard the police siren, then he ran.
And then he took off. No, he stayed. The police interviewed him when he was there. There were no charges filed yet. Mm-hmm. The police said that there was no reason for any criminal action at this moment. The photographer was taken to the hospital with minor injuries. So I don't think he meant to do it.
I had a similar circumstance in a Walgreens where...
You had your truck in a Walgreens?
I came out and I got in my car and I started to back out. And there was somebody standing there, and I hit them, and I assumed it was paparazzi, and it was just somebody getting into their car. But you never know when paparazzi could be following me.
Very true.
Yeah, that happens all the time.
People like to know what Steve is shopping for when he's at the store.
Hey, Steve's at Walgreens. He must be picking up another prescription. Hey, Grandpa, you need a hand?
I think I saw him with a pack of Swisher Sweets. For those.
You know how Steve likes the hard candy now? What's wrong with Angelina Jolie?
Angelina Jolie, in an article in Vanity Fair, talks about her life since the big breakup. And, you know, she talks about that she and Brad Pitt are...
Since she stole Jennifer Aniston's husband?
That's right. Some people just won't let that go. She and Brad Pitt are, you know, trying to, you know, be civil to each other. They care about each other and their family. They're mostly, you know, do whatever is best for all the kids, six of them and all. But she also did mention that since the breakup, she's developed high blood pressure and also Bell's palsy.
Hold on. Andrea's looking for a tiny violin.
Sorry about the high blood pressure, just because, you know, everybody has that. I do feel sorry for her, though.
You do?
Well, a little bit.
Okay.
No, you don't.
I know.
Well, Bell's palsy.
Is she healthy enough to break up another family, Dean? Or we don't know yet.
Bell's palsy, which is nerve damage in the face, it caused one side of her face to droop.
It's sometimes temporary. Is it temporary or permanent?
Apparently temporary, because she is crediting acupuncture with her full recovery.
Huh? My
dad had that.
Had Bell's palsy?
Yes, he did.
Mm-hmm. Tom Peterson had it as well, didn't
right?
he?
Right. Yes, mm-hmm. he did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can understand why it's
permanent. It's a very scary thing.
Yeah.
That's right. You'll be okay, Uncle Steve.
Listen, I got so many aches and pains now, I wouldn't even know if I had it.
You should try acupuncture. Would you like one of us to administer acupuncture to you?
You know what we could do is I could have Pat Tomasulo do it if he's done sitting on Anna Balavon. What's the Quincy Jones story?
Quincy Jones has settled a years-long... dispute with the estate of Michael Jackson. He claimed that he was not paid for rights to music that he produced. He claimed that he was owed $40 million. The estate claimed that he was owed $400,000. The ruling came down yesterday. He got $9.4 million.
Well, I'm glad that that's settled.
$9.4 million. He produced Billie Jean. He produced Thriller. He produced all the music that was used in the Michael Jackson documentary, This Is It, and those two Michael Jackson Cirque du Soleil shows.
Quincy's a genius, and always was a genius. But, you know, the last time I talked to Quincy Jones was, I think it was before I came back here. It must have been at the end of the afternoon show run back, like, around 2010.
You mean Q?
Q. And somebody had brought in a whole bunch of, this is such a cliche, somebody brought in a whole bunch of food, you know, like it's a backstage, you know, concert situation. And it was ribs and chicken and all sorts of messy food, right? And Quincy was going to town like he hadn't eaten in months. And I'm talking to him and just saying, thanks for coming in. And food's falling out of his mouth. And, you know, you go, well, what do you do, right? What do you do? Do you say, Quincy, how about you chew and then we talk? But food's flying everywhere.
Man, so I didn't. He's hungry.
Did what anybody in my position would do. I'm an intern, stand between Quincy and I and take those food particles. It was very odd. Very odd. So that next time odd. You see Quincy, make sure he's eating.
That is odd.
Yeah.
I don't think I've interviewed anybody when they had a mouthful of food.
I'll try Quincy Jones. It's legendary. All right. So. That's all that we have time for at this time, and Dean will return tomorrow, same time, same channel, and we'll do more. And tomorrow, will you talk about some movies?
I will have, I'll have my review of the really fantastic movie, Detroit. Hard to watch, but worth seeing, Detroit. I'll have the Charlize Theron movie, Atomic Blonde. And, Steve, the one that you've been waiting for, the Emoji movie, the cartoon, the animated film that features Sir Patrick Stewart as the poop emoji.
Mm-hmm. It's a career maker. Yeah. Congratulations to him on it.
He's a two-time Laurence Olivier Award winner, now playing poop.
I don't even know why that emoji exists.
I wonder if the emoji, well, so many reasons, but if the emoji movie can kind of, you know, art imitating life, kind of mirror the situation in Washington.
I don't know why we need it, you know? But I guess that's a stupid question when it comes to Hollywood. Dean, has there been a movie yet where you just see people texting and you have to read the entire movie? I mean, that's coming, isn't it? It's got to be coming.
This movie is pretty close to that. This movie, I mean, you know, it's a kid's movie. But in a way, it's a statement about how life is led through your smartphones, how everything that happens in your life happens through your smartphone now. So I don't want to, you know, get too...
It's a message movie for 8-year-olds?
Movie critic over analytical, but the movie is kind of about that.
Okay.
Really.
All right, well, normally Dean and I...
And there's poop featured in it. I don't know if I mentioned that.
Normally, Dean and I end on a hilarious note, but in this case, we're leaving you with a deep thought for the day. Take your smartphone, throw it away. I'm not going to say that.
I didn't say
I'm
it.
I'm not going to say it. You didn't say it. I'm going to give you credit for it.
Thank you.
Andrea did not say Patrick Stewart must be steaming. Andrea didn't say it, so she gets credit for that.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Dean.
Back with a big story next on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
David Berkowitz, 24 years old, a postal worker, walked out of his Yonkers apartment last night, turned the ignition key in his car, and found himself surrounded by police. Well, he said, you got me. Police say those words ended the biggest manhunt in New York City history with the capture of Son of Sam.
I didn't know he was a killer. I didn't know he looked nice.
Son of Sam killed 6 and wounded 7. How many people do you know, your neighbors, people who might fit that description? Nice, quiet, a little moody, kept to himself.
Owned a cat. Son of Sam, the murders. What was I, 16? 15, 16 years old when this is going on. The Smithsonian Channel tells us a really horrific story of the city of New York on edge in the lost tape, Son of Sam. Is Tom ready? Guys, is Tom ready? Okay, we'll talk with Tom Jennings in just a second from the Smithsonian Channel. All right, let me go to him now. Tom Jennings from the Smithsonian Channel. By the way, if you don't watch the Smithsonian Channel, allow me to correct your behavior. Start watching it. Terrific programming there. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Steve. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on. All right, let's do a little history lesson here. Son of Sam, summer of what year?
Started in 76, ended in 77, but summer to summer.
And total number killed?
6.
And the scary thing was kids, for those of you who didn't or weren't around in the 70s when dinosaurs roamed the earth, we used to go parking. Like, you'd have a girl, and you'd go out in your car, and you'd make out in your car. You'd park somewhere, you'd make out in your car. So he tended to prey on couples, right?
That's correct. You know, that was not only couples, but he targeted women with long dark hair, and he would find couples parked in what used to be called lover's lanes, you know, dark residential streets, for example, often in the outer boroughs. This wasn't something that was happening at Times Square. This is where people lived in residential areas. And he would find these couples parked, and he would walk up behind their vehicle, always at night, almost always very late at night. And he used a .44 caliber handgun, and he would just start shooting arbitrarily into these vehicles. And that's what created so much fear, is that it was really happening to anyone at any time, anywhere.
And because this is pre-internet, if this were happening today, can you imagine with Twitter and Facebook and Snapchat and Instagram and all the things going on? The panic would be exponentially worse, and yet the entire city of New York was on edge because he was killing kids who were out, and you didn't know if you were a young couple if you were next.
That's correct. Yeah, we found a lot of footage. You know, there was nothing to report, you know, as far as developments, except there was another shooting, you know, and the police just couldn't crack the case. There was no internet. There were no cameras everywhere on street corners. And so what we found in putting this together and, you know, using all of this wonderful old media is that there were lots of man on the street interviews, because that's what the police, or excuse me, that's what the reporters could report, is that people are afraid. And so that fear just, you know, gripped the city. And, you know, it was, even though they didn't have, you know, Facebook or Twitter at the time, they had the New York Daily News coming out every morning with another headline that, you know, he's still hunting us. And it was a crazy time. I guess today, if it were happening, things would just be moving exponentially faster, but the fear would, I'm sure, be the same.
Tom, wasn't there another fear? Wasn't this one of the first cases where they were worried about copycat killings, too? So they were trying to get the information out there, but not give too much because, you know, for giving people ideas.
Yeah, there was a fear of that, and actually there was a belief that during the investigation that he, David Berkowitz, the son of Sam, may have been a copycat in and of himself to another famous serial killer in the United States that still remains unsolved, which was called the Zodiac,
right.
The Zodiac Killings of San Francisco, which happened just a few years before the summer of Sam. And the Zodiac did the same kind of thing. In general, he would find people parked late at night outside of the city of San Francisco, shoot them, and then he wound up corresponding with reporters at the San Francisco Chronicle at the time, much like David Berkowitz, when he was still known only as the son of Sam, was corresponding with a very famous New York Daily News columnist named Jimmy Breslin.
Right.
So, there were kind of eerie similarities to the two cases that were going on, but there was a fear, you're correct, that other people, they didn't want to let out too much because they thought the city's so out of control that somebody else is going to get the bright idea that they want to try and do this too.
Yeah, and there was also a concern, this is pre-Bernard Goetz too, if I remember my calendar, where you were, you know, vigilantes in the street. And somebody innocent is
correct.
Going to get killed in the process of this as well. So the city had a lot on its hand to try to control it. And 70s New York was not a safe place to begin with. Having said all that, was Berkowitz ever on the radar prior to capture where they didn't have enough on him, or they got him when they got him?
They got him when they got him, and they got him because of a parking ticket. He was never on the radar.
Isn't that amazing?
He just, you know, he was never on the radar, and he was caught because he spilled his guts to the cops after he was arrested, and he said he would go out almost. What was really frightening, which you know, when you hear it now and you realize what he did, he killed people every few months, but he said he'd go out almost every night looking to kill someone, and all the killings were because of opportunity. And that opportunity would be that he could find literally a parking space near where he'd seen a couple parked in their car.
How about that?
And if he could find a parking space, he would go and kill somebody. And the last killing that he did, he parked, but not realizing he had parked in front of a fire hydrant. And in trying to solve the case, the police were going through anything and everything, and this they would look at parking tickets from the nights of the murders, and they found this one parking ticket two blocks away from where this couple were shot, And they went and they saw the car parked outside of Berkowitz's apartment. They looked inside and they saw guns. And they gave him probable cause and they waited for him to come out of his apartment. They arrested him and realized this is the guy. That's how they got him, because of a parking ticket.
What was the motive?
The motive, well, it's changed over the years. But
right. Originally, it was the dog's fault, right?
Well, yes. Well, not necessarily the dog, but the motive, which stood for the test of time, it's changed into other things. But basically, the motive, you know, he was crazy. The motive was an entity named Sam, which he called Sam, this evil entity that spoke to him through his neighbor's dog, a black Labrador, and Sam was the one instructing him to go and kill people. Now, no one knows who Sam is because the dog's name was Harvey. So, you know, try and figure that one out. But this entity named Sam, this evil entity that he talked about, was the reason why he killed people.
Also, too, Tom, I have to ask you, I'm just obsessed with this new show that I'm watching, The Fall. It's about Gillian Anderson trying to catch a serial killer. And it's just incredible to me. And I'm sure this is, you know, part of the rapport, too. But the mind of a serial killer, you know, and they always try and fall back and say, oh, you know, tough childhood, things of that nature. Is that kind of what you found in your research as well, too, with the Son of Sam?
Yeah, he did have a tough childhood, and he had been in the Army. And some people claim that, you know, he... was jilted by women throughout, you know, much like, say, a Ted Bundy type, who also was terrorizing the nation in the 70s, he took it as such an affront at some point that a girl with long, dark hair had told them to hit the road, that he decided he was going to strike back. Oftentimes with serial killers, and like with the show The Fall that you're referring to, the strange part is, you know, that we found with the Son of Sam and Berkowitz is the neighbors are all interviewed after he's arrested. And you know, he was a postal worker, you know, and one of the reporters says, oh, he kept to himself. He was kind of quiet, a little shy. And the reporter finishes the report and says, how many of your neighbors would fit that description? The point being, nobody knew. It wasn't like he was
nobody knows.
Like,
yeah, nobody knows. Nobody knows what goes on behind right. closed doors. You don't know until it happens. 40 right. years later, 40 years down the road, he's allegedly found God and he doesn't want to leave prison. The story is all-encompassing and fascinating, and the Smithsonian Channel has it. It is the harrowing story of a city on edge, The Lost Tapes, Son of Sam. Tom Jennings, great work by you. And when does it air?
It airs this Sunday, 9 East, 8 Central.
8 o'clock Chicago time, 9 as well, and check your listings around the country. Tom, thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
8:51.
Doesn't that sound interesting?
Oh, absolutely.
And then he would go back to the scenes, mm-hmm. you know, as the police were investigating.
He doesn't want to get out of jail now. He's found God, and he doesn't want to get out of jail.
Okay, good.
Yeah, to, good. You know, save a little money.
We don't want him out.
Yeah. 8:52. And at 8:55, the Steve Cochran Show continues with a story that I don't know how I feel about this. Little Christopher Lezcano, he was born, the 7-pound baby boy was born mid-flight on a Spirit Airlines flight from Fort Lauderdale to Dallas on Saturday. Lezcano's mom, Christina Penton of Phoenix, boarded Spirit Flight 971 from Fort Lauderdale Hollywood International Airport Saturday night with her two young children. About 30 minutes into the flight, she was 36 weeks pregnant. She told flight attendant she wasn't feeling well. She didn't expect the baby to arrive for 4 more weeks, but the baby had other plans. They called doctors on the ground, checked if there was medical personnel on board. As it turned out, there was. On board was a pediatrician and a nurse.
Oh, thank God.
Wow. Soon after that, it was clear she was having a baby, and the baby was born Spirit Airlines, and the baby's safe and the mother's safe. When are you supposed to stop flying when you're pregnant?
I thought it was like 8 months, isn't it?
I thought it was 32 weeks. I thought it was
That's
7 months.
Question. 7 months?
Yeah, I thought it was a couple months before, yeah.
Because we've heard about this a couple times recently where babies have been born on planes, mm-hmm. and it's risky to everybody. Mm-hmm. In the meantime... I'm not a big Spirit Airlines fan.
Well, I was,
you know,
which is weird. One time I flew Spirit, and maybe this was just a one-time thing. They didn't have water. Like when you go wash your hands in the bathroom,
yeah,
the water was
a la carte, including right. gas for the plane.
Mm-hmm. including the seats.
It's run very cheaply. And I've flown it twice, and twice is enough. I'll never fly it again.
So do you know what they charge if you give birth while in flight?
Well, this baby, for yes. the rest of its life, will get free flights anywhere Spirit flies on his birthday.
On his
only
birthday?
On his birthday?
Now, this would be a really cool thing and a nice thing, but Spirit flights are $8.
It's true.
So he'll get the free flight,
yeah.
but then have to pay for the carry-on
right.
and the overhead.
Yeah.
And the water.
Yeah.
And preferred
yeah.
seat.
Yeah. The important news here,
which is
the important news here, yeah. is mother and baby are fine.
Good.
There we go. Yes,
are fine.
The main thing.
At least he wasn't born on February 29th.
Yeah, where you'd only get it once every yeah. 4 years. Be Spirit Airlines' dream.
Yeah. Leap year.
8:58. We got one more break before the news. All right, we'll do that right now. And CLTV will join us next on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Got a brand new 9:12 now, and CLTV and 720 WGN watching or hearing. Let's talk about some good news. I was just reading off the air this story from Forbes. Why Illinois is in trouble. 63,000 public employees with $100,000 plus salaries costing taxpayers between $10 and $12 billion. That's, you know, a drop in the bucket comparatively to everything else, but it's just a great symbol of why we're in the mess we're in. So all we need is the youth of America to save us. And working towards that is Tuskegee Next. This is a great, great program. I mean, if you've not heard about Tuskegee Next, we're about to make you feel good, make you feel better about life in general. Steve, how are you?
Good morning, Steve. Thank you.
Nice to see you again. CEO, where's the idea from Tuskegee Next come from?
Well, the idea comes from, as a lot of people don't know, unfortunately, there was an experiment during World War II that a group of African-American men were brought to Tuskegee, Alabama. There were two experiments going on at that time. One was to prove that black men could not fly airplanes, and the other dealt with watching the effects of syphilis on men.
Now, to back that up for a second, because I don't want to lose that thought, the initial thought of this before the Tuskegee Airmen became one of the great heroic stories of World War II was to back up the prejudice and the discrimination that already exists.
Yes.
Like, why we got to deal with these colored folks? Let's figure out a way to get rid of them.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And the great thing about our military, which was segregated at that time, it's probably been in the forefront of bringing integration, bringing in and including people that weren't included. And if you look at that, look at what they did in the military, including the Tuskegee Project. As we know from history, they went on to be one of the greatest group of aviators the world has ever known.
Right.
And what I just really love, because they're truly patriots. And the great news is, as we know from the story, that they did prove that they could fly. They did serve with valor and unfortunately came back to their home and could not find jobs in aviation. And did this as true patriots and without bitterness.
You could be a great pilot and not have courage. You could be a great pilot and not be a hero. You could be a great pilot of any color. But this is an exceptional group of people who deserve their legacy to be taught and remembered. And that's why Tuskegee Next to me is such an important program, because you pay it forward in two ways. It's about remembering the past, but it's also about honoring these young folks we're about to meet here.
I couldn't have said it better.
Well, you could have, but I said it for you. And I want to get to Sonora here in a second as well. But introduce the two young people we have here.
Well, I have Joseph and Nia. Joseph was in our first class and just tremendous young man. And Nia's in our third year class and just, again, just exceptional. Honoring the legacy of the Tuskegee Airmen, we have been very fortunate that we have the best and brightest. You know, I know we talk about this generation and how they don't keep scoring T-ball and do all these things. Well, I have found not only an engaged and intelligent group, but a caring group. And again, I'm just honored to have these kids that are part of our program. And when they come into the program, one of the things I ask is, I said, hey, guys, this is a new program. We're going to invest in you, and all I want you to do is smile and look me in the eye. And sometimes that's a little difficult when you've got a guy that's well over 50 that doesn't look like them, even though he is African-American, doesn't relate to them in any way.
Yeah, but he's a handsome devil, isn't he? Look at him.
But you're they don't know why you invested in him.
Right.
Until they solo an airplane for the first time. And then something happens to them. Confidence comes over them that I think is changing. And, Steve, one of the great things about this program is that when you're idealistic like you and I and believe that the world can be a better place,
amen,
and we can do a few things to make it a better place, is between the promise and the provision or the dream and it actually coming to fruition is a process. And a lot of times that process is long. Sometimes those of us in the beginning don't get to see the fulfillment.
It's true.
But this year I have one of our kids, one of Joseph's classmates, came back as a CFI, a certified flight instructor.
How cool is that?
So that is cool. So I'm excited. I'm excited about not only Pat Brady, who's been a part of our program since the beginning, but Sonoria Young, who is our executive director. And Dave, Andrea, and Steve, thank you. You guys have embraced us from the beginning.
It's just a great thing to talk about.
And anytime you want us here, we're here.
Well, you say that.
Thank
but,
you.
You know. Pat Brady, grab that mic just a second, Pat Brady, because you're the one that brought Steve to me and told me about this. You're a pilot yourself, but how did you hear about these guys?
Actually, I heard through Steve, who's chairman of the DuPage Airport Authority, and we were talking one day. He came up with this idea. I go, that's brilliant. Because there are so many jobs now in aviation, they're talking a million jobs when all these pilots are forced to retire at 65. And Steve had the idea, let's honor the Tuskegee Airmen. But the probably the coolest thing we did is the first fundraiser when some of the original Tuskegee Airmen were there. And you walk in, the whole place is silent. I mean, it is reverence for what they did. They gave great speeches about their experiences.
Walking, talking statues.
No, I mean, that's history. Everyone's in there. But the stories they told of how difficult it was for them, and there's not, Steve, like you said before, there's not an ounce of bitterness. No. These guys are just patriots.
Yeah, it's amazing. Joseph, tell me about you now. Grab that microphone, if you would. You're a pilot?
I am.
All right. Yep. What does that mean in your terms right now?
Well, I'm a private pilot now, so my goal is to be an airline pilot when I get older. And this was really a first step and also a really big step in my, aviation career. And for me, the program brought a lot of success and a lot of hopefulness for what is also possible in the future because, not everyone who wants to be a pilot can be a pilot. And, just being in the program itself.
Well, it's expensive.
Yeah.
There's a need for access, and getting training as fast as you can opens the doors to a lot of other places.
Exactly.
So what type of pilot do you want to be?
I want to be an airline pilot. I want to fly.
Commercial airline?
Cargo, commercial.
Okay.
Yeah, any of those things would be awesome, or maybe even corporate. I just
right.
want to, fly.
You want to fly?
Yeah.
That's right.
And Steve, I think they're being modest. You cannot be an academic lightweight and fly an airplane. These kids are very bright.
Yeah. By the way, we don't want any lightweights in the cockpit, just to be clear. For those of us behind the cockpit, we'd like no lightweights in the cockpit. Nia Allen is a cadet. What does that mean, Nia?
What that means for me, what it means for me is that we work, it's five of us in our group, and we work day in and day out, flying, studying, working together to get our private pilot's license and be a little something like Joseph. I've been flying since I was 14, so I came into the group with a little bit of experience, but I still learn so much every day. I learn new ways to understand things that I thought I understood before, so it's never, no one ever comes in as a genius or as an expert. We all learn different things from each other and
sure.
kind of work together to master.
What's your dream?
My dream is to become a commercial airline pilot as well. Like Joseph said, I'm open to cargo. I'm open to corporate.
You've been in the simulator with Joseph? Is he a fair pilot?
I actually haven't. I haven't been in the simulator with Joseph. I've been in a few different simulators. So.
This isn't going to be like one of these things where you're the boss and you're not going to let Nia take.
She can be the boss.
Okay. Right. Just check it. I'm just curious, though, and to go take it backwards again for just a second, the Tuskegee Airmen coming through school and stuff, is it taught anymore as part of the curriculum?
No.
You got to go find that information yourself.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
So once you got to know what the basis of the program was in the history, that was probably eye-opening for you guys, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I personally have been, I knew I wanted to be a pilot at 8 years old, And from there, I did research. Everything plain I loved. My mom used to immerse me completely in aviation.
Is that right? Where did that come from with your mom?
Me liking planes.
well, that's a good story.
I'm from Georgia, and she used to take us to the airport, my cousin and I, and would just let us sit on the tarmac before they closed it and gated that area. We would just sit next to the runway and watch people taxi back and forth. Planes would land over our heads.
No wonder you're excited about it.
There was an article last week with the Oshkosh show that women make up less than 10% of pilots, and there's a real push now to try to get more females and young women involved.
I would think
it would
be a huge growth area.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's even bigger numbers than I would have known. Mm-hmm. You know, last time I checked the statistics, it was around 5.
Fractions.
So I'm definitely excited to be a part of that movement. I have mentors and mentees, young girls that I try to push towards aviation that I see a little bit of myself in as passion-wise. So I'm definitely excited to be a woman in aviation, more specifically a Black woman in aviation. I look up to so many different people, both men and women, that are committed to helping me reach my goal. And so it's only right for me to make sure I do the same.
You take history, you take patriotism, you take energy and youth. I mean, you know, you're not going to stop these guys. Who are you kidding? Sonora, get in here. Grab that microphone if you would. What's your dream for this organization? Where do you take it from here?
Oh, gosh, that's a great question, Steve. Thanks for having us again.
Sure.
The sky's the limit for Tuskegee Next. We're super excited about these young people that we've been able to get through. And Tuskegee Next has really blossomed from this idea that Steve had, happened to be there when he put the first meeting together, when we created our board, and to see that now blossom into three classes of kids. And it doesn't stop with just them going through our program. The funny thing is that I've been, you know, I text with the kids all the time. They're in college, they're, you know, needing stuff and wanting summer jobs and internships because they are like sponges. They get a taste of this and they just can't get enough. And so the work doesn't end with them. We just keep adding.
Well, but that's great, right? Yeah. That's the way you build it. And Steve, bringing it back to you for a second here, you got a very successful business, but you don't know how to start a foundation or any of this other stuff, right?
You know, and I think a little bit of stupidity, all entrepreneurs have a little bit of just, you know, big ears and just dream. And you try it. And again, you say, what am I doing? This is stupid. But somehow when you see the first young lady that soloed, I said, this is special. And I saw it. And I knew that was something special. The checks written, the shameless calls to people begging for money to support. And Steve, I hope you don't mind. You know, I'm just going to be just a couple of shout outs to some of our benefactors.
Are you kidding? Absolutely.
Well, first of all, Milton Williams, who will be 95, I think, in August, is just a hero to these kids. He is one of the original Tuskegee Airmen. He came out and has spoken with the kids. He's been a little bit under the weather. I think he'll be 95 in August. Born in 1922, like my father, looks like my father, dresses like him, the mannerisms. I just love him. Got to know him through Tuskegee. I just want to give a shout out to him. I hope you're listening on the radio. And then a couple of our benefactors, Inland Real Estate, Ed Waymer with Wintrust, met with the kids. One of the things that we do is we introduce the kids to the community. And last week,
give them a network to network.
Yes, we were with John Rogers from Aerial Capital, who spoke with the kids and did a whole tour. And it's important that they see people that look like them that are successful. And the ironic thing with John is John's father was a Tuskegee Airman, so he took particular interest and time with the kids. So we have a lot. Aldridge Electric, Mead Electric. We've got a John Burns Electric. We have people from all over the community. And American Airlines, Sonora, please don't let me forget, just gave us a nice check that we are so appreciative for. And we'll be honoring them, and they will be honoring us tomorrow because they see the importance in having a feeder, a pipeline of pilots for the future. And as Pat mentioned, the mandatory retirement age of 65 is going to open up a lot of opportunities. And we hope that we are proactive enough that we will have the best and brightest ready.
You know, I don't want to be naive here, but I think that this generation, Joseph and Nia's generation, like my kids, We're not slapping labels on people like we used to. No, you come from homes. It depends on who your mom and dad are and how you were raised. But there's less of that than ever before. Having said that, is it tougher for an African-American kid to get into this business than it is for a white kid at the same level?
Well, I think we cannot deny the progress that has been made in the last 50 years. But there's also an economic factor that's come with the challenges over the last 200 years. When you look at people of color, just enormous percentage of, that live in poverty and live in communities where there are no jobs. For me, my clarion call, my John the Baptist call is about economic empowerment and jobs.
Sure.
That's why I'm an entrepreneur. It's not only to help educate my children and have a home and do vacations, but I have 70, 80 employees that depend on me. And because of that, they create an ecosystem by which they're able to send their kids to college.
Sure.
They're able to live in communities, buy houses, enforce the rule of law, have families.
Be responsible citizens.
Be responsible.
Be patriotic Americans.
Absolutely.
Help others get to their dreams. Help fulfill people's potential.
Amen.
Yeah.
Keep
preaching. I'll go to the same church.
But when you don't have economic empowerment, you don't see a benefit of the rule of law, when you don't see the benefit of societal gains, it's very difficult. And unfortunately, disproportionate numbers of African Americans have been left behind. And what we have to do, all of us, and including African Americans that have had an opportunity to progress, is to reach back, to grab a hold and bring people with them.
You know, the thing, we talk about this for the kids in some of the toughest neighborhoods in the city, too. 99% of people want the same thing. I don't care if you're in Lake Bluff, you know, or in the worst neighborhood in Chicago by way of definition of violence. All you want is your kids to get to school safely, get home, have a family, grow up safe, grow up okay. But sometimes all it takes is exposure to a dream. There's kids listening who don't have a dime, who are just trying to survive. They don't think they could be a pilot. They hear something like this, and they hear, maybe I could be a pilot someday. Well, that can open up a world they don't even know about. So that's why I salute you, Steve. You know, Steve, as much as you hate when people pat you on the back, here's a big pat on the back and a hug as well, because this all started with you, pal.
Bless you. I think there are a lot of people that desire to do things, and there are people out there doing it in a different way.
You got to let kids know it's okay.
Yes.
You got to encourage dreams.
Yes, yes. And I am just blessed, Steve, with all humility and all honesty, I'm just blessed to be able to be in a position to help people.
Well, that's nice of you to say, but I know how hard it was to do all this and put it together and the team you have. And thank you, Lissa, as well, for all of the work that everybody involved does with this. But listen, Joseph, I know you're going to be a great pilot. You're probably already a great pilot.
I hope so.
I'd fly with you anytime. If there's no room in the plane, strap me to the top, dude. You'll land it fine. It's just fine. And Nia, same for you. Now, listen to Joseph. He looks smart to me. He looks like a guy that really has it going on, clear-eyed pilot. And Sonora, thank you, and Pat, for making the introduction here. But Steve, you're always welcome here.
Oh.
So let's get some people out there, those big check writers, Andre. Let's get those fat company,
absolutely,
fat cats.
We should.
Let's get those guys who are going, hey, I got maybe a little extra cash. I could help Tuskegee next. This sounds like something I ought to be involved in. And for moms and dads or parents or kids or somebody that wants to know more, if you want to get involved, Sonora, Steve, one of you guys, what do you do?
Well, right now, www.tuskegeenext.com. Tomorrow, .org. Tomorrow, we're having an open house at Illinois Aviation Academy. And another shout out to Bob Warderick and Illinois Aviation Academy. They came along and partnered with us, bringing these kids into this boot camp, bringing them into this life skills training. And, oh, yeah, by the way, a pilot's license. So we're going to be out there tomorrow promoting our program. Reach out to Sonora. We're looking for pipelines. We do have some good strategic partners, Legacy Flight Academy, Aerostars, and Tamara Home, a part of After School Matters here in Chicago. Chicago used to have an aviation academy, and we need to get back to some of those things. And a real shout out to Tamara Holmes and what she's doing, because she has provided a pipeline for us. She grabs them. You know, we have to work together. There should be someone at this level, and this level. We're not in a silo operating on our own. Mm-hmm. We're in partnership. We're partnership with you and what you do.
Well, it's the same way you build a business. You got to have floors, right?
Yes.
You got to have floors to build it. It's great to see you guys. You're always welcome here. TuskegeeNext.org is where it all starts. And write a check. Come on. Kick in. I took more money out of Pat Brady's wallet just a few minutes ago. I'm going to bring it over and shove it into Steve's suit.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. Yeah,
Our guest wasn't even a glimmer in her parents' eyes when this thing was a hit. Right? On the cover of the double July-August issue of Women's Health magazine is a shot of the five women who are finalists for Next Fitness Star for Women's Health magazine. Bettina Gozo is here. Bettina, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Nice to meet you. Love your smile. Congratulations on all your success.
Thank you.
You are center of this picture of these five women.
It's pretty cool.
Pretty cool. And you told us off the air, your mother has bought every one of these Chicago.
Oh, yeah, pretty much.
Yes.
She takes to take pictures of herself with all the magazines, too. It's really funny.
That's fantastic. Good for her. All right, so you're 30 years old. When did you become a fitness nut? When did it become more than just taking care of yourself?
Well, I played in a band for a living first, and it's kind of a weird story because I, you know, played in a band, loved, thought I was in shape, and then one day my roommate took me to a boot camp class, and I thought I was in shape, but realized...
Thought you were going to die in the middle of the class?
Yeah, yeah. She still makes fun of me to this day.
Right. As you run her around now.
Yep.
So you said, listen, that's not good enough for me. I got to take it to the next level.
Yeah, I mean, the way it made me feel was like a way that I wanted other people to feel, too. So, you know, the fact that I wasn't always athletic and the fact that now I am, I want other people to feel that, too, because I know there's so many people out there that are like, you know, I wish I could get started, but I can't do that, you know?
That's everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless you played college sports, you know?
Everybody's got an excuse.
Yep.
All right, so when did you find CrossFit?
Not CrossFit. I do more cross training.
So cross training. I thought you came from CrossFit. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I do like, you know, some of the moves that CrossFit does in their workouts.
Right.
But most of my workouts are very functional. Like, I want people to be able to move for life, you know, be able to keep up with their kids, be able to, you know, pick something that's up overhead, you know, just something that's going to be able to keep them moving for life and not hurt them in the long run.
Yeah.
Bettina, what are the first steps? Okay, you decide I want to do this. Does it start with changing your diet, stretching? I mean, because you can't leap right into it. What are the first steps?
I think
I'm going to need a nap.
after the nap.
Right.
Well, the first thing is just to obviously decide that you're going to do something about whatever it is you want to change. So, you know, you don't want to sit there and tell yourself, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, because then as soon as you don't do the big list of things, you're just going to be like, oh, I just give up. So you have to think of one little thing that you want to start with, whether it be, I just want to walk 20 minutes a day, or I just want to do one workout this week because I have done zero in the past year.
I want abs like yours, so if I can have those, that'd be fantastic.
So you want to start with the little things?
Yeah.
Things. Okay, sure. We'll work on that.
Okay, good.
But that one little thing is good, because if you do take the baby steps, then it's kind of hard to find the excuse.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's like you celebrate that small moment instead of just, you know, being disappointed when you can't get that big goal right away.
Is there a chronological order to it, or is that where people get bogged down? In other words, should you just do one thing, whatever the one thing is?
Start with small and then start adding on.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah.
What's your belief in weight training?
I love weight training. I think everybody should weight train your body. Yes, you should be able to move it properly. But then once you can move that properly, then you can add some resistance.
We are seeing more and more studies that say if you want to lose weight, it involves two things. What you put in your mouth, obviously.
Yes, right, definitely.
But secondarily, weight training, maybe even more than cardio.
Yeah, agreed. You build more muscle, you're going to burn more fat. And then overall, you're going to just be a healthier person. Your muscles are stronger, your bones are stronger. And you can move better.
So if you want to lose weight and build muscle tone, so should you lose the weight and then build the muscle tone? Or can you do it
at the same time? You can do it at the same time, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, building. I mean, when you weight train, you're going to be building muscle and you're going to be losing
the fat.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, we have some additional staff questions to ask Bettina.
Sure, yeah.
And if somebody wants to text in a quick question or two for one of the five finalists for the Next Fitness Star, what do you get if you're Next Fitness Star?
Well, I get to be another feature in the magazine, which is pretty exciting. Then you get to contribute to the magazine for a year. And then I get my own little fitness workout DVD, which is kind of cool.
That is cool. Again, taking it to the next level.
And then your mom will buy all those copies.
Yep. Oh, yeah. She'll buy them all.
There you go. It's Bettina Gozo. Where do we follow you on social media?
At Bettina Gozo.
All right. Bettina Gozo.
Correct.
More in a moment on 720 WGN. We just got a call from Susana Mendoza's office, the comptroller, saying she could join us right now. The show for all of those in Springfield is on from 6 to 10 a.m. And she's welcome anytime on the show when we don't have a previously booked guest or when we have time to properly explore the topics that need to be explored. So Sandberg's working with Susana Mendoza's people now to put her on at a time that's reasonable for us. We don't have time to just put people on the minute you call. It's not quite how it works. At 9:55, Stephanie Menendez is here. You know Stephanie?
She, we love
one
Steph.
Of the people that runs this joint.
Yes,
she does.
Yeah.
Dave, yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
Ms.
Stephanie.
Menendez to you.
How are the plans coming for Walter Jacobson's surprise 80th birthday party? Because nothing's more surprising than when you turn 80.
Well, we had it yesterday.
Isn't he turn 80 tomorrow?
Right, but we wanted it to be a big surprise.
Yeah.
So
It did.
We got this beautiful cake from GBD Cakes, and he loved it. So
what did I get him? Do we know?
A big cake from GBD
Cakes.
You
got him a big cake from GBD Cakes.
That was nice of me.
Yeah, that was...
Stephanie has a question for Bettina. Now, you've been working out like a fiend. You look fabulous. You've been working out like a fiend all year.
Thanks, yeah.
But you have a question about what?
About squats and the booty.
This is... Squats and the booty used to do
legit.
Mornings on B96, didn't they?
It's a legit question.
All right, so what's your question?
So here's my question. I think that there's a myth that if you do a lot of squats or lunges, that you're going to wake up one day and have a very round bottom. So my question to you is, how many squats or lunges do you need to do to get that fullness?
What are you looking for, like the J-Lo booty?
I mean,
because I have what I like to call white man's flat ass disease, and we're holding a telethon for it at some point. We just haven't figured when. But I didn't know this was an issue for women.
It is. I woke up this morning and I did 190 squats before I left the house.
Are you kidding me?
That's a lot.
No, but I am still like lacking.
All right, so where does she get her J-Lo booty?
So I would suggest, number one, not only doing squats and lunges, you should incorporate deadlifts because then you work your booty a little more targeted, and then bridges too. But with squats and lunges, you definitely want to focus on like heavier weight training. So, you know, instead of doing your 100 and whatever it was,
right,
maybe only do like 8 to 10, but super heavy where those last few reps are going to be pretty challenging.
So I'm lifting weights as I'm lunging.
Yes.
I'm not just
lunging.
Got it.
Yeah, as long as you could do the regular ones without weight with good form, and then they feel like they're pretty challenging, then yeah.
What's the bridge?
The bridge is like when you're laying on your back with your heels down.
Okay.
And then you just bring your booty up in the air.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you make a bridge.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Is that like a V up?
Got to squeeze
is
your
that like a what?
A V up.
Got it.
A V up? Yeah, it's kind of like a V up.
A V up. V up is more for your abs.
That's for your abs.
A bridge is like when you're laying on your back, your heels are on the ground, like you're maybe a few feet away from your hands if you had them at your side, and then you're just bringing the hips straight up.
Oh, gotcha.
Your butt, and then
okay.
And you just hold
down.
It there. Or do
hold
you do
it
reps?
There. I would do reps. Yeah. And that'd be a good warm up for before doing squats and lunges to make sure your booty's activated.
I like to put a weight on my stomach.
Yeah. Activate your booty.
Booty.
That's exactly right.
Thank
so
you
does
for
that.
That
a,
yeah.
And a deadlift is visually.
It's like a hinging pattern. So these ones I normally don't recommend to people if they're not sure if they're doing them correctly, because it's definitely something you can hurt your lower back. So definitely suggest having a trainer help you out with that kind of move, especially if you're to start lifting heavy. But definitely can build the booty with deadlifts.
Yeah, and I have a spotter for the show just to be safe. Yeah, just getting up and out of the chair and all those things.
Dave's getting tired. Taxing. Dave's getting tired, though, doing it.
It's great to meet you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
How do we vote for you?
At whnextfitnessstar.com.
I'm going on right now to vote.
.com. Can we vote multiple times?
Vote all day, every day until August 4th.
It is Chicago.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Nice to meet you.
Thanks
for having
me.
Congratulations on all your success.
Thank you.
All right, 9:58. Let's switch gears here, and Bill and Wendy slide in. Susana Mendoza is joining us tomorrow morning at 7:40.
Perfect.
And thanks to her office for putting that together. I mean, I don't want to sound, short or anything,
but
well publicized what time the show's on.
No, we're going to book it. We'll have more time that way tomorrow, too.
I'm glad she's on tomorrow. You know the show is 6 to 10, don't you?
This show is 6 to 10. I didn't know that.
Yeah, 6 to 10.
And maybe
start listening.
Maybe there'll be some action in Springfield today, and we can talk with her about it tomorrow.
That'd be great.
Oh, wait.
That'd be great. I'll give Susana Mendoza credit ahead of time. She's coming on.
Yes, she is.
Okay.
6 to 10 a.m.?
6 to 10 a.m.
All right.
Yeah, that's when we do the show.
What time do we start?
Well, you start it.
Soon.